Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. This is Simone speaking today, chairing our Monday call with the W3C Verifiable Credentials for Education Task Force. And my calendar is June the 3rd. And let's just get started with the housekeeping items and then dive into today's topic. IP note. Most of you know that these calls are open for everyone to participate. If you, however, are planning to make any substantial contributions, make sure that you review and sign the IPR agreements of the Credentials Community Group. Those are linked in our invitation email, as usual. You'll need to have a W3C account. That is also something that you can easily do online. Moving on to call notes, we are recording these meetings, so everything that has been said and transcribed will be archived online. That link is also available in the email that we sent out, but happy to put that in the chat again soon. In order to keep things moderated and flowing, we do use the chat to queue up. So if you want to queue yourself up, just type Q+ in the chat, or you can even raise your hand with the button on the bottom of your screen. And please be brief. If you have a question to ask, we want to maximize the time that we spend in the conversations. Thank you. At this stage, we normally move on to introductions and reintroductions. So if while I spoke, someone joined who has never been with us, do feel free to open up the mic and introduce yourself. Or if you have not been around in a while and just want to say hello, please do so now. All right, looks like we have a cozy group today, so no worries. You may jump in later if you feel like. So any announcement and reminders at this point? Anyone has events or things that have happened that feel like this group should be aware of? Again, go ahead and unmute or queue yourself up and share with us. And that's also fine. Actually, we have Phil, please go ahead.
Just a reminder to everyone that there is the Badge Summit coming up in August. I believe it is the first week of August in Boulder, Colorado, at the University of Colorado at Boulder. And there is it's kind of a combined meeting, and Noah Gazelle has graciously allowed T3 to have a series of presentations about some of the work, including this one, that will have slots in the agenda. And then there will be a follow-up meeting for those interested in T3 work specifically after the conclusion of the Badge Summit. So that's the beginning of August, and look forward to seeing people there. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Phil, for that reminder. It's timely as, I guess registrations are still open, but that's around the corner. And a lot of the things that we've been talking about here and that we will touch on today, will be picked up at the summit. And that's always a great opportunity to see everyone in person. Thanks, Noah, again for hosting that. Okay. With that done, I think we can move on to our main topic. Today, our very own Phil Long is going to share some of the work that he's been stewarding along with other colleagues. Dimitri and Karen are here on the call today. So specifically, Phil, you know, will tell us a bit more about the linked claims work that he's doing and the connections to our VC ecosystem and some other interesting projects looming at the horizon. So with that said, Phil, I'd like to pass it over to you. Feel free to share your screen, or if you need any assistance, do let me know.
All right. Well, let's see what happens here. Oh, can you hear me? Hello.
Yes, we can.
We can, yes.
I'm having audio. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Audio. Cancel that. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes,
yes, we can hear.
Okay, I'm having a little bit of idiosyncratic audio things. I don't know quite what's going on. So if I drop out, Dimitri, if you could take over, that would be great.
Sure.
And so let me try the audio. Oh, it looks like it just dropped again. Can you hear me still?
Yes. Yes, no. We can.
All right. Anybody hear me?
Yes, we all do. And we see your slides too, Phil.
And you can't hear me. Okay.
Yes.
It seems like my audio is just popping in and out, so I can't tell.
So your incoming audio is continuing.
So this is a topic that we've been working on for quite a while now, last couple of years almost, with Dimitri Zagardulin and most recently with Karen Passmore and Golda Velez, both of whom are the three of them being terrifically valuable collaborators in this work on linked claims. The intention of linked claims is essentially, I guess I should say one more thing. We have gotten support for this from the Gates Foundation through the T3, which is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation's nonprofit branch of the Innovation Network. And we have also received support, modest support from a few other contributions. So what makes the idea behind linked claims is going to be articulated, but let me just start with saying, first of all, that the LERVC has various attributed value propositions, some of which are listed here. It's tamper evidence. It's certainty of the whole wallet holder's identity. I put a big star around that, and we'll come back to that. Clear descriptions of the claims skills, structured data, linked data references to standards and frameworks, potentially for things like competencies and skills, and ease of asking for what's sought in what's sent, meaning there's a mechanism by which a relying party can make a request for credentials and the holder of the credentials can make a decision about whether to share them or not. And that's sort of the core set of attributes. The current state of these VCLERs is really sort of twofold. One is the ability to send a group or stack of credentials, one or more, in a verifiable presentation to an endpoint, such as a credential wallet or some other endpoint. On arrival, they are an independent, unordered set of credentials. That is, of verifiable credentials. The relying party does have agency to choose what gets put into the package that is sent, but that's their agency that they have. The actual initiation of the request comes from the relying party themselves. The second alternative for sending credentials is that one can send a compound credential, where that is credentials embedded within a credential, and that's the model of the CLRV2. The outer credential envelope is a signed document, a signed credential, which has metadata. Then there are embedded credential objects, in this case with CLRV2, OBV3s, Open Badge Version 3s, single assertion credentials. They are used in the case of the CLRV2, among other things, for the representation of a transcript, where each individual course is its own independent OBV3. The package as a whole can be signed, and the OBV3s can be left unsigned if the institution wishes that's issuing, or they can both be signed, as in doing so, allowing the individual OBV3s to be separately verified if they are if the individual who was a recipient of them wishes to do so. Okay. the composed credentials, neither of these approaches gives the holder or the job or the school app, the job app, the holder for either a job or a school application, the ability to orchestrate the sequence of their credentials to the relying party, highlighting what the holder may want to emphasize. And I mention that simply because that's the current state. When you get a stack of OBV3s in a VP, then those credentials are there for the individual relying party to look at as they wish or not, in any order they wish or not. And that's the same as true of the composed credential as well. Why does this matter now? Well, because we're increasingly needing to use the capabilities of linked claim, of verifiable credentials, and linked claims is a particular framework for doing so for a particular population, which I'll get to. So there's the obvious concern today with respect to the validity of credentials in terms of their, are they actually from somebody that's real? To what extent are these credentials fabricated and not associated with a an issuer that that you can identify in some fashion? And most importantly, from our perspective, there is an entire segment of the population that is likely not to have issued credentials from an institution or training body, or from an employer who has the ability, which at the present time none are exercising at this point, to credential their own workers. So the self-employed, the non-traditional workers, those who are in small businesses that can't afford the infrastructure necessary to issue and or process verifiable credentials, constitute a population for whom our current architecture and design essentially overlooks. So with the interest in skills-based hiring and advancement, we are interested in putting assertions of credentials that have endorsements in the same secure, verifiable context as assertions of achievements, licenses, and other verifiable credentials like degrees. We want to mirror the pattern of social recommendations currently used for job applications and resumes, where typically you send in a CV or a resume, and at the bottom you list four or five individuals whom you suggest as recommendations to support the contents of your application and the validity of your resume or CV. But we'd like to do that with the same architectural framework that VCs in general possess. And more importantly, we'd like to make sure that the recommending credential is designed specifically for that purpose. That is, it contains bona fides so that the relying party can judge the recommender's knowledge and the value to, that the recommender is suggesting in terms of the prediction of the ability of that particular applicant to do the work the job is that the job requires. So, to do that, we need recommendations that allow you to bind together two different verifiable credentials in a way that is tamper evident, one credential to the other, that that link between the two is tamper evident. We also want to be able to bind in a tamper evident fashion links to digital objects that are somewhere out on the internet. For example, evidence that you might have and you've placed it in, say, a Google Drive. You'd like a link from your credential to that evidence in that Google Drive that is tamper evident in the sense that since that that evidence was placed in that Google Drive, it has not been changed from that point onward. And we'd like a method to provide confidence in the credential subject that that credential subject, particularly the self-issuer, is who they say they are. There's an asterisk by that because that is part of the future work, which I'll get to at the very end. So that's the general framework. I'll pause for a second since I can't see speaker notes if there are any questions at this stage or comments from Dimitri or Karen as to my intro.
No questions, Fields, if Dimitri or Karen.
Nothing.
Nothing from me. I thought that was a really good intro. Thank you.
So maybe I should stop sharing. And
can you hear us, Phil?
Stop sharing for a second.
Yeah.
Can you all, were you able to hear me?
Yes.
Through that?
Yes, we were able to hear you.
Okay. Were there any questions? Because I'm not hearing audio from anybody at this point. Okay, I see a question that Ediko has mentioned. Can you please explain what the significance is of ordering and sequencing the credentials and what makes it not possible? So the issue is not that they can't be, that an individual can't choose to click through them as they wish. The issue is that the person that has sent the credentials, that is to say, the person who is the credential subject, the person whom the credentials are about, does not have a way for indicating to the relying party the order and the focus of the credentials that they're receiving. That is, I can't tell the relying party, I'd like you to go in this order with these credentials. I can't say that within a given credential, I would like to highlight these particular elements potentially relevant, in my view, to the application that I am applying for, or the position I'm applying for, et cetera. None of that is possible. I can simply present the credentials in the context of a combined credential in the CLRV2 fashion. There may be the opportunity for these things to be grouped in a standard way based on some template that resembles what we think of as a resume or a CV, but I'm not in any way able to point the sequence of going through those to the relying party or say anything about the evidence or other elements in those credentials I would like to highlight. I hope that addresses the question. What else do we have here? And these questions are coming in faster than I can respond to them. Dimitri, do you want to take some of these? Because I've got to get my audio fixed because I didn't hear anything.
Sure. Yeah. So the one thing that I would mention to Ildiko's follow-up question of, is the credential format limitation or a design feature? It's basically a question of whether the issuer arranges it or can the receiver arrange it, right? That's the main design question. This is the general design choice between monolithic kitchen sink credentials, like your full transcript, versus handing individual credentials of your courses and allowing you to compose them into, some of them into resumes, into other credentials, right? So it's just single picture versus puzzle pieces.
And I've got your audio now, so I'm
good.
Back. You can hear me?
Good, yeah, we can hear you.
Okay.
Welcome back.
Weird. Okay, so I will go back. Is there anything else in the question list that hasn't been addressed that we need to respond to, Ediko?
No, thank you.
Okay, so I'll go back to presenting and go there. That's where I left off. So, in general, requirement for link claims is we're following the W3C VC, in this case V2 data model. We have statements about external objects, other VCs that we would like to make. We have references to other digital objects we would like to be able to point to, and we would like to be able to go further, which is a stretch goal at this point, but which is possible, and that is to point to specific identified objects within a credential as opposed to the entire credential. So there may be an interest, for example, to say, I would like to point to this particular piece of evidence to bring it to your attention and not to the credential as a whole that contains a series of links to evidence. Finally, we'd like a mechanism for these things to be tamper evident, just the way that the VC itself is tamper evident. And that's one of the characteristics that the hash link affords us. And we want to emphasize where possible that the evidence is performative, that it actually demonstrates something the person is able to show and do that's relevant to the skill that they're describing. All right. So what does this actually look like? And for this, we have some gorgeous drawings, images of the user interface that the link claims is following. And I would like to go off of sharing now and turn it over to Karen to walk through briefly a view of what this might look like.
Can I stop you for a second? There is a question from Sharon in the chat.
Sure. Go ahead.
Why do you switch presenter?
I can take that. And yeah, go ahead, Karen. Feel free to share your screen and say a few words of introduction. But to answer Sharon, you can link the general notion of hash links, which is a link plus a cryptographic hash of the destination, can be applied to anything, to credentials, to PDFs, to non-VC documents, and so on.
Okay. Can you all see my screen?
Not yet.
Not yet? Okay, great.
We can hear you clear, though.
Thank you. Allow to share screen. Are you able to see my screen now?
Not yet. I think you have to select the window or the tab that you're sharing.
Let me see. Window. Share.
Now we can hear you. Now we can see your screen.
All right. Sorry, I'm not familiar. One second. No, go ahead, Dimitri.
Yeah, so Sharon, your follow-up question, is that useful when it's not verifiable, though? So
can you see my screen now, the wireframes?
We can see, yep, we can see it as well. Apologies, I got kicked off. Sharon, to answer your question, is that useful when it's not verifiable? So what do hash links in general, what sort of cryptographic assurance do they give? They just give the assurance that the destination object hasn't changed since you looked at it. So, for example, let's say there's a PDF somewhere, and I'm going to create a very simple, very dumb credential that I read this PDF. Right? That's the self-assorted VC that I'm creating. And if I link to that PDF without a cryptographic component, if I just link to it, all I'm putting in there is the URL. Somebody who's hosting that PDF could change it to a completely different contents, after I issue this credential that I read this thing. If you add any sort of cryptographic hash to your link, you can say, I read this specific version. And if it gets changed afterwards, then the signature, then the hash won't verify, right? So that's all the assurance that it gives. It doesn't, hash links don't give assurance of authorship. You need additional verifiable credential mechanisms for that. So all they do is just lock down the version of the object that you're referring to. Over to you, Karen.
Thank you. Thanks, Dimitri. So I'm going to show the experience of a user who is interested in creating a self-claimed credential or for a specific skill that they have. And I'm going to be showing the mobile version of this experience, although these are responsive designs that we've created, so they would work across any type of device.
Karen, and then, do you want to say a few words of introduction for yourself?
Oh, sure. Yep. Thanks. Okay. So my name, pardon me, right when you asked that, of course, my throat's all clogged. My name is Karen Passmore. I'm the CEO of Predictive UX, and I have a background in, designing enterprise applications and SaaS applications. And I was working most recently with Arizona State University on their digital wallet for verifiable credentials, which is where I met Dimitri, and then subsequently got introduced to Phil. Pardon me, goodness. And we've been working together on the user experience of the Linked Claims app. And our approach to this project has been to look at it from an inclusive design perspective to ensure that it's usable by very different types of people across various intersectionalities, and paying close attention to things like internet connectivity. So how can we create an experience where someone might be working on either their local machine with intermittent internet connectivity, or perhaps they're working in a public environment and they can't save data to their local device. So we've taken a lot of that into consideration as we've created these designs. And we've also looked outward to research other people have done in this space to learn what we can about people who might be creating some of these claims. And our goal is to first create the experience for the user who would claim a skill, and then we're going to move on to the user experience for getting a recommendation for a specific skill. But today we just have kind of our first iteration or pass at these concepts and ideas. And so as I show this, bear in mind that, you know, if you want to give some feedback on anything you see here today, it would not hurt my feelings at all, and whether it's positive or negative. So we welcome your insights. We want to make the best app possible for everyone who might want to use it, to include, you know, folks that are going to take this kind of open source platform and extend it into an application that they can envision for themselves. So to get us started, this is the kind of landing page that a user would see when they come here to create a self-asserted skill credential. And I've put some kind of marketing material content on here, but of course anybody could put anything here. It was just to help tell the story of why you might want to create a self-asserted skill credential. And the idea here is that this user can come here, sign up in seconds to capture their skills. And this would be a way for them to stand out from other people when they can say, I have a verified skill and I potentially have these recommendations behind that skill to help validate it further. And the pitch here is that they can now tell a verifiable story, and we're suggesting they can capture volunteer work, job, document their on-the-job training, or claim the number of years of experience they have in their field. And then they can also add their proof points, request recommendations. And the nice thing here is that the user keeps total control of their data, which I think Dimitri and both Phil were alluding to in their presentations. And you can share only the information you want, and you can revoke access at any time. So from here, if someone wants to get started, they can click get started for free. And we welcome them. And, you know, we have this sort of friendly user interface, like this person, Tessa, is going to walk them through the experience, although we're not using any AI at this stage. And we just ask them where they want to save their linked claims. And the reason is that we wanted to make sure that people could get started, and if they lose internet access, their data could be saved somewhere that they choose, or they could choose to save their data manually and then come back later because they may not be able to finish this entire thing end to end. So for our demo today, we're going to allow people to choose Google Drive, and then they could choose which account they want to connect to. And then from here, once they're validated with that account, they can continue to create their linked claim. So the first thing we want to ask them is we're going to be able to get some information from them if they select something like Google Drive. So we want to verify that we have the right name displayed here for how they want to present their linked claim. And they could change this name if they want to. But if everything looks good, they can click next. And then now we want to ask them about the skill that they want to claim. So they can fill in a skill name, and then they can describe how they earned this skill. And we would provide some prompting text here. So I have it already filled in with an example, but we're mindful of the fact that some people might not know what to put into these fields. So in the screen before this, we actually have prompting text. And then on the bottom, we have the duration. And we chose duration specifically because research has shown that when actual dates are put in here, it can create a sort of bias against people because it might show gaps in between maybe their earning of a skill and their employment records. So using duration actually decreases that sense of bias and instead focuses on the level of expertise someone has acquired around a specific skill. So from here, we choose next. And they can describe the skill that they have. And we do provide prompting text here. And in a future state iteration of this design, we're going to be adding in the opportunity for people to use AI to generate a description here if they want to, or they can simply type in their own description. And from here, they can then choose to add portfolio items. And this is an optional step. So if they have videos or photographs or anything that they want to point to online, they can add those items here. And this would create URLs within their linked claim. And they can add as many of these as they want. So in this example, I'm just adding a video of the perfect shot of espresso, and I point to the URL of that video. And then if I want to add another, I can simply tap this link, and then it can add more. And from here,
I want to pause super quick on this screen here. So this is the one of the things that Phil was emphasizing, was talking about. When creating self-issued credentials, right, there's a lot of sort of unknown and a lot of questions with regards to self-issued credentials in general. Like, what sort of value do they bring? And one of our answers to that is twofold. The self-issued credentials are as good as two things: your evidence, and this is what we're doing here. Take a video of your skill, link to a performance appraisal, to an essay that you wrote, to a GitHub repo. So this is that screen. So this is one of the two sort of main weight-bearing features of self-issued credentials. And then the other one is, of course, recommendations, which we'll see later on. That's it.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a great call out. So from here, after they've added their evidence, we ask them if they want to add a main image to their credential. So this is really just about, you know, design and formatting and making it present nicely if they want to add an image here. And the idea is they could point to really any image that they have, or, you know, they could even go out to something like Unsplash and, you know, grab an image from there. And then if they select next, they can see the credential that they've created. So we have our main image that has been added here. The person's name has claimed basic barista training, how many days it took, and then it has their description and then how they earned the skill and a link to any portfolio items. And then beneath that, we make sure that they're aware that by selecting this box, you understand that you are creating a public link to this credential. So they know that this is now a publicly available link. And they can choose not to do that if they want to. And at any point during the creation of this credential, they can save and exit. Or they can, you know, go back to another step and make some edits if they're not happy with the way that this looks. But if they are happy with everything, they can select finish and sign, and it saves it to their Google Drive. And so now they've saved their achievement, and we're exploring whether or not we're going to promote sharing this on social media. So that's a conversation that we're having. But if we don't, at the minimum, they would see some visual representation here within this app of the credential that they've created. Along with when they select this, they can copy the link to that credential. And then as a next step, we want to encourage them to go get a verified reference. So get a recommendation today. And if they select that button, it takes them into a flow where we've just provided them with some copy that they can actually literally copy. We've given them some text along with a link to send someone to a place where they can write up the recommendation, which would take them the recipient back to the linked claims application to write a recommendation that could get then attached to the original credential. So the user can choose to copy this text and then paste it into their native email client. And so they would copy this text. And then when they're done, we would just say, oh, you've requested a reference. Now, we're not able to track this at this point. But I can let Dimitri speak to that. So that's the entire flow that we have so far.
Thank you so much, Karen. So we had a couple of really good questions in the chat. So Ildiko brought up a great point about ongoing durations, right? So what to do when, like, it's one thing if I took a 5-day intensive course in, I don't know, espresso making. And it's another thing when it's, I've been practicing this since 2023, ongoing up till now, right? Mm-hmm. And it's important. So one, that's a great design consideration for everyone dealing with these skills. The main thing is that, main thing to note is that that duration skill is freeform text, right? So I can say 2023 till now, right? I can indicate, or rather I have as much flexibility to indicate that it is an ongoing skill as I do in like a Word document resume. So that's thought number one. And then the second question was from Nate Otto on whether we're interested in sort of integrating with or linking to skills repositories, since that's one of the major, I don't want to say unsolved, but that's the heavier UI UX lift of how do we walk in the fine line between making it user-friendly, right? So like on the user-friendly axis, freeform text, like, I know how to pour an espresso, right? Like that's one definition of a skill. And then on the other end of the formal spectrum is linking into a federal skill code repository and say, okay, this is skill 1, 2, 3 as codified by this and this directory, right? So yeah, we're definitely interested in linking to and integrating with any sort of existing skill repositories.
Dimitri?
Yeah, go ahead.
I can jump in
please,
here
and
say that we actually have arranging a call because, as you probably know, the C3 community at T3 has been working for a while now on a federated skill repository network with a user interface query environment system called Competency Explorer, if I've got that right. And the question that we're exploring and going to have a conversation with the developers of that is, can we put in a link or to that particular federated search system from within this app, and or provide a UI that can be translated into a query for that particular network? And that we hope will be something that we will be pursuing actively, because you're absolutely right. There is a number of different places where we would like the individual to have an option to put in a structured representation that follows some ontology or taxonomy of skill descriptions that might also be available to people who are issuing credentials from an institution or what have you. To draw from. So we're definitely interested in doing that and have a conversation scheduled. Thanks. Okay. At this point.
One sec. I just want to address Karen's comment about being able to track. Hold on. I'm just reading Nate's comment in chat referencing skill by URL. Excellent. Yeah. Thanks, Nate. We'll definitely take a look at those links. And as always, we'd love to work with you on any of that. Real quick, Karen's comment about that we're not tracking the whether or not the person received and responded to the recommendation request. So one of the main design choices that we followed closely here is that this is purely a client-side application, meaning we don't run a server or a database on the back end. So you don't create an account. We don't store the credentials for you. We don't track the recommendation requests and the responses, right? So this is maximally privacy preserving, meaning when you hit request a recommendation, it opens up, it's a mail to link. It opens up your email client so that you can email your professor or your friend or whatever, whoever you're asking for the recommendation, right? And similarly, since we don't access your email inbox, we don't know when they reply, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we have a minimal amount of statistics, but as much as possible, this is meant to be privacy preserving. Karen, did you have any... any other comments, UI-wise?
Well, I think that we're prioritizing, as you said, the ability for users to come here and create something and own and protect their data as much as possible. And I think along the lines, you know, it's a fine line, right, about how far we go with that and then where the user experience may get create friction, right? But we're not trying to solve, I think it's fair to say, we're not trying to solve every problem right now. Our goal is to get something out there that people can use to create a linked claim and then get their recommendations. And as we go through this process, I think we'll learn a lot, especially as we get, you know, kind of do an initial release or somebody picks up the code and builds an application with it that will help inform further iterations of the application.
Thanks. Over to you, Phil.
Yep. Okay. So if you can release your screen there so I can jump back in. There we go. And now I'll head back to link claims. I actually think this is the point where we jump, for Dimitri's sake, into what an idea of how the JSON-LD for doing hash links works. And I'll bring this up briefly and turn it to Dimitri to go through it. Oops, sorry, there it is. Dimitri?
Oh, sure, yeah. These couple of slides just illustrate the mechanism of what one of the hash link mechanisms looks like, right? So it is a pairing of a URL and a cryptographic hash, as I mentioned to Sharon earlier, to lock down the particular version of an object,
right?
To make it tamper evident. Over to you, Phil.
Right. And this is an example of the same idea, but in this case, linking out to a random digital object. In this case, a journal article that might be in the person's, might be in a location that they have access to, or their own personal repository of journal publications of their work. So this might be the kind of thing that a recommender would do to give credence to their ability to judge whatever this particular credential is about. In this case, it's about being able to pilot a UAV. And so they've written a paper on it. And so this is a hash link to that paper. So moving right along. So what's new here? This is essentially nothing terribly new in one sense. We're taking advantage of the VCE data model and the cryptographic binding approaches, including hash links, which have been around for a while, but not particularly well used. They do exist in True Age Credential. They do exist in the TruePIC C2PA implementations, which bind in their particular case, in this, images to the camera, that captured it, and generate a credential as a consequence. What is new is the introduction of hash links for the purposes of this kind of social recommendation and evidence pointers. So in summary, then, we'll just say that link claims is an on-ramp for incorporating unsigned data into complex proof claims. It uses this hash link mechanism as a format for doing so, and it tries to mirror the patterns of social recommendations and the like that exist today that we've had for a long time. The other thing I would say is that it is specifically oriented towards those individuals that otherwise wouldn't be getting issued credentials from an educational institution, training organization, et cetera, and gives them a way to create credentials through an interface that they can then store into a digital wallet, into a Google Drive, et cetera, for them to be able to participate in this ecosystem equally with others. Now, with that said, there's a couple pieces of future work we're very interested in, and we're doing some staging in this link claims project, one of which is associated with connecting a mobile wallet to a wallet-attached storage so that an individual has the opportunity to manage and control the credentials that they have over a lifetime and not just continually have the only location for their storage being their mobile device. There are other functionalities that by doing that are enabled. One might be envisioned in this context, authorization authentication to credentials in that storage that is available 24/7, and allows access to specific things, specific individuals or endpoints to look at, and things of that sort. The second piece is associated with another new type of credential, which we're calling the narrative credential. And in some ways, this is just representing the storytelling part that is missing in resumes and VCs to, as represented by VCs to date. And that is literally to tell a story as you would type a story, with links in that particular text to the credentials that back up the claims that your story is making. And so the simplest way to think about this is kind of a manifest to a container where all of the different objects in the container are listed as links that can be followed to see what the credential is for that particular object in the container. That's in the sort of generic sense. In this case, it allows you to tell a story with whatever narrative you think makes the collection of your skills relevant and meaningful to the relying party in terms of consideration for that opportunity, and do so by backing it up with data. And so I'm very excited about the possibility of doing that next. And lastly, the piece that we have sort of danced around is the idea that the person writing this self-issued credential doesn't have the aspect of an institution or an organization behind an issued credential to give it some degree of credence and sense of value from a human perspective. A credential issued by XYZ institution is differently treated than perhaps a credential issued by Phil Long about myself. So the question is, what do we do and how do we make sure that at the very least that the credential that I'm issuing about me is actually from me? And the first step in that is to make a process that allows you to validate that and do the KYC, which issuing institutions do by default when someone applies to be a student there, or in an employment context when someone applies to be an employee at Accenture or someplace like that. Those individuals go through a KYC process, a know your customer, if you will, process to make sure that they are who they say they are. And in our case, the idea for doing that here is with a notarization service. And literally it is leveraging notarization services that exist and which almost every state in the U.S. at least now permits in terms of a remote notary service to allow the individual's identifier, in this case their DID, to be connected to a person. And the notary is a new credential type that is bound to, with linked claims, to the individual's credential that is making their claim. So that's the context of the notary as a future piece of work. And lastly, there are lots of other places that this idea can be applied to. It can be applied to, for example, keeping track of the papers you should submit if you're an academic or you're a business person and you want to have a repository of the things you've published. It can be used to do reputation reviews. It can be used to, as you saw in my reference to the C2PA project, it can be used to put a credential around the origin of an image and the data around its capture to try to deal with the proliferation of image manipulation that's out there. It can be used to track disaster recovery funds to see whether or not they actually got distributed to the individuals that claim that they were claimed to be sent to help them and others. So that's linked claims. And I'll stop there and we'll open it to any questions that people might have.
Thank you very much, Phil and Dimitri and Karen. I'd like to kick off the questions with one about the outcome of this initiative. So where will this stop at? You have been published some kind of code or open source components of this. Is there any plan for going into user testing or user research or sort of strategies or designing the adoption strategy?
Good question, and timely because I believe we have, in fact, been able to secure a small amount of funding for doing some usability research. Karen, would you give a brief summary of what your intentions are here just to do this?
Yes, absolutely. I appreciate the question as well. It's super important to me to do the not only usability research, but also understand the people who would be creating this data and then the consumers of the data. For right now, what we're going to be focused on is talking to potential users of the application from the perspective of creating a linked claim. And we're going to take the application that you just saw today and then approach anyone that we are able to recruit for the amount of time that we have available. We're looking at doing maybe a 6-week usability study, have them walk through the application with us through some various scenarios and get their feedback on the accessibility, usability, intuitiveness of the application. So just making sure that we're actually creating something that people can use. Another part of that we'd love to embark on is doing some deeper research and understanding when people might want to create a linked claim and then how they want to use it, right? So we're showing kind of a very limited subset of the possible use cases that Phil displayed on one of the last slides there. And we would love an opportunity to go deeper into that research and also understand things from different perspectives. So we have, you know, traditional learners and non-traditional learners and people who are maybe going to be creating a linked claim who might currently be employed versus somebody who isn't employed. And just coming at it from understanding those various perspectives is important to us, as well as looking at it from the notary perspective. So when somebody is going to provide a recommendation to someone, it's important to us to understand, you know, would they go through this process? What kind of blockers might prevent them from making a recommendation? Because we know some upfront friction is necessary to create a verified experience here or a verified link claim, but we don't want to go too far, right? So then beyond that, we're also interested in understanding how companies might consume a linked claim, because we understand that, you know, right now we're at the early stages of designing this, and we've had internal conversations about things like Phil mentioned earlier, like taxonomies and ontologies and other systems that we could connect to. But we also understand that it's important for us to look at the companies that might be consuming linked claims and what systems they're using and what their data models are. So there's just so much research here that we're excited about doing, but we're definitely at the early stages. So it's focused on the usability of the current app you saw today.
And one last comment on that. We didn't describe it here, but we do have an interest in being able to present a view of credentials to an individual who does not have a credential wallet, that is to say a relying party that does not have a credential wallet, but could be viewing them via their browser and verifying them via their browser. That does not mean that the credential is sent to them. It just means that they are given a link to where a credential is temporarily stored to do that. And then the question becomes, if they wish to receive the actual data to put into their systems, how would we do that because of the challenges associated with establishing the current mechanisms and protocol exchange for credentials that small businesses are unlikely to be able to support and maintain themselves. And we have some ideas about going about that process. Lastly, I say that T3 has been generous and the funding is allowing us to put this application up when it's complete for probably at least a 3 to 6 month period for anybody to use and allow us to collect data potentially on its usage and allow others to try it out and find areas that we can improve or that they can improve because it will be open source.
Yeah, to add a couple, just a few more words to that. As Phil mentioned, it's going to be an open source app, right? It is already, and it'll be that much more useful, when it's finished. So you'll be able to take a look at it, host your own. We'll publish the, credential schemas of the credentials that we're creating, both the, recommendation ones and the lightweight, self-assorted skill credential. So, and we were definitely, there's lots of exciting usability research, especially as both Phil and Karen mentioned, in the receiving relying party end, right? If all of this is successful and I get a self-assorted credential, with recommendations, with evidence, all this good stuff, I send it to my employer. How will the employer consume it? How will they display it? How will they be able to verify it? Not having verifier software of their own. And how do they work it into their existing workflow? All of those things we're looking at. So please come talk to us. ILTA Convention, have we considered a use case for prior learning recognition? So two things. One is I think other projects are focusing on that a bit more, right? So the traditional learning recognition diplomas and course credentials. But the other answer is the self-asserted learning and skill credentials that we're doing in the app right now are flexible enough to recognize those as well. But we'd love to talk to you more about it to see what you have in mind. Any other questions?
Over to you, Dimitri.
Yeah. And anyone else?
Oh, excuse me. Over to you, Simone.
Simone. Okay. Yep.
All good, all good. I was reading up on the chats. I think that's it. We covered a lot of ground in this hour. Thanks again, Dimitri, Phil, and Karen for showcasing today. I feel this work is going to be connected to the other developments in the ecosystem, particularly when we open up recognition and we just really are more inclusive in thinking about credentials beyond formal qualifications and even beyond skills, if in a way. So if you know of any particular use cases that would benefit from this new tool that has been built, come forth. We're always open to welcome contributions or leading questions that we can throw to the community. In an open way here together every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern time in the U.S. or 5 p.m. Central European time, except when the world shifts, when there is that misalignment in terms of timing. Okay. Again, thanks a lot. We'll see you next Monday, likely. Again, you can find us on the main list if you need anything meanwhile. Thank you.